Black Agenda Radio, Mondays at 5 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
This is Black Agenda Radio, a weekly hour of African-American political thought and action.
Welcome to the radio magazine that brings you news, analysis, and commentary from a black left perspective. I'm Glenn Ford. Coming up, the Black is Back Coalition for Social Justice, Peace, and Reparations rallied in Washington, D.C. We'll hear from several of the speakers. But first, the co-chairman of President Obama's Deficit Reduction Commission want to make vast cuts in what's left of the social safety net, including Social Security. We spoke with consumer advocate and former presidential candidate Ralph Nader.
Well, first of all, it's just a proposal by the two chairs, who are basically corporatists. Alan Simpson has ridiculed Social Security in a very coarse way that's been quoted over the years. And Erskine Bowles sits on the board of Morgan Stanley and is supposed to be the representative of the Democrats. So the choice of the two chairs by President Obama prejudged what we would expect from this tentative proposal. Now, there are 18 members on the commission, and for any proposal to be ratified by the commission, which is just an advisory body to the Congress and the White House, 14 out of 18 have to say okay. So we shouldn't take it that seriously, because there is at least four hardcore progressives on the commission. Having said that, it really is it's what Dean Baker, the progressive economist, called a document from Mars. He says more than 25 million people are unemployed, underemployed, or have given up looking for work altogether, and this group is talking largely about reducing deficits instead of increasing federal funding for public works and other projects, put people to work in jobs they can't ship out to China and communities throughout the country, you know.
Whether those recommendations become law or not, they still are the starting point of the conversation that's been set in motion, however.
Yes, and of course, they're so bad that it ought to get the dander up of the progressives and their writers, because at least they're not going to be blindsided. They've already signaled where they want the commission to go. I mean, it's such a cruel thing. They even went out of their way to say they got to cut jury verdicts on people who've been mutilated by medical malpractice. I mean, first of all, 90 out of 100 victims of medical malpractice never file a lawsuit, never go to a lawyer. They suffer and they're paraplegic or quadriplegic or brain damaged infant in silence. And they're going after that, which of course is what the big insurance companies want. So I think they went so overboard. It's a mockery. And if anything ought to get the liberal left going, it's this monstrosity, which, of course, Obama has to take some responsibility for. I mean, they even want to cut the child tax credit. I mean, Robert Kuttner, who went on Amy Goodman, picked that one out. The child tax credit that goes to working families who need that kind of relief, and they targeted that. And look what they didn't do. They didn't really say we should have a speculation tax on derivatives and other transactions in Wall Street, which economists have estimated can raise $400 billion a year. So people walk into stores as we speak, and they pay 6-8% sales tax on necessities of life. But if someone buys $100 million of Exxon stock or $200 million of Pfizer derivatives, they don't pay a dime. So they didn't touch that one. And, of course, they didn't focus on why, if somebody makes money from selling stock or getting stock dividends, why should they pay 15% when people who are sweating it out can pay 20, 25, 30% going to work every day in a steel mill or in a office skyscraper. So it's in a way it's going to be beneficial, because it's going to show the hand of the corporatist Democrats and their Republican allies in a very vibrant and distinct way. They want to cut Social Security, but in 40 years, 50 years, so that's down the pike. They don't talk about how single-payer health insurance can save $400 billion in administrative expenses by replacing Aetna and Cigna, who spend so much time and money and clerks denying people care and in some cases condemning them to death because they can't afford to pay for their own health care or operations or other medicines. So it's a mockery. And, of course, they don't say that the corporate welfare should be cut, subsidies, handouts, giveaways. Those are $200-400 billion a year right there. These have all been documented. Even the right-wing Heritage Foundation doesn't like corporate welfare. They put out a report criticizing it a few years ago. So did the Cato Institute. So basically, it's a class-based proposal by Alan Simpson and Erskine Bowles to put the largest burden on the least powerful people, the most powerless people, the working people and the poor. So there's no more rhetoric that can camouflage this. Their fangs are out in the public, and we're going to apply some dentistry to them.
But Erskine Bowles and Alan Simpson's views were well known before this, and President Obama appointed them anyway.
Yeah, if you appoint Alan Simpson and Erskine Bowles to head the commission, and they put out their proposals, which are going to be voted on later by the rest of the commission, you know what you're going to get. And when they did appoint them, I said to reporters, this is basically the right wing of the Democratic Party and the corporatist Republicans, not even the libertarians, you know, who don't like corporate welfare. No, they didn't have or who don't like wars of aggression and Pentagon boondoggles. No, they didn't have a say either. So he knew who he was picking. And, of course, you know, he's very clever. He knew they were going to come out this way. Then he comes out less draconian, you see. And they say, look, he didn't take the full measure of their destruction. You know, he curbed them. He diluted them. He had some ideas of his own.
In other words, triangulating his own commission.
Yeah, of course.
Peter Orszag, who was Obama's director of the White House Office of Management and Budget, the top numbers budget guy in the Obama administration, came out on Monday with an op-ed piece in the Times praising the recommendations regarding Social Security, saying, well, it's better than privatizing it.
Yeah, well, you see, that's the technique. The technique is you lower people's expectation levels by terrifying them, and then you say, well, we'll give you some crumbs off the table. We'll elevate what you're getting. I mean, the thing is so perverse. Erskine Bowles, he goes to about four meetings a year of Morgan Stanley. He makes $300,000 for four meetings. So basically, you know, seven days work, he makes $300,000. This is an oligarchy. This is a plutocracy. And we shouldn't let Obama get away with this maneuver.
Now, you say that the right, and that includes the Democratic right, is showing its fangs with these recommendations. Isn't there, of course, the danger that Democrats, including people who we think of as progressive, will cower at the sight of those fangs?
Well, it shouldn't be up to them. It should be up to anger the people, mobilizing the people. I mean, we need a progressive coffee party here. There are far more people who are hurting. You ask conservatives who work in Walmart, do you want to really still be paid $7.50 or $8 an hour? Well, suddenly they'll drop their ideology and say no, you know. I think I deserve $10 an hour when the boss is making $10,000 an hour. $10,000 an hour plus benefits, et cetera, is what the head of Walmart makes, maybe $11,000 an hour. So, you know, before lunch, he makes more than any one of hundreds of thousands of workers make in a year, before lunch on January 2. So we can't rely on these Democrats. This is a mobilization document, as far as I'm concerned.
So you hope this document will be a red flag in front of the public bull?
Yeah. You know, it's designed basically, it's being condemned by the right-wing conservatives as not enough cuts in the deficit, not enough. And then, of course, the progressives are saying it's too much, it's too draconian, it's too cruel. So then the editorials like the New York Times can say, well, you see, it's being condemned by both sides, so it couldn't be that bad. So they know how to play the psychology. That doesn't mean millions of Americans are going to play the role of suckers. I think they're going to see through this. Because, you see, that's why it's important to talk to people and say, why if you go into a store to buy clothing and furniture and the necessities of life, and in some states food, you have to pay 6, 7%, 8% sales tax, but the fat cats on Wall Street can buy trillions of dollars of these securities and derivatives, they don't pay anything. That's so you got to contrast it that way. The progressive rhetoric has got to get more concrete, more energetic, more in the experience of regular people. How come OSHA? How come OSHA's budget? You see, they want less regulation, or Bowles and Simpson. Well, less regulation means more Americans are going to die, get injured, and get sick. 58,000 Americans, according to OSHA, die because of workplace-related disease and trauma every year. Compare that to 15,000 homicides. Compare that to all we spend on prisons, very few of whom house corporate criminals, like that coal mine disaster in West Virginia. Gross negligence, criminal negligence.
These chairmen are also recommending lower corporate tax rates and effectively higher middle income rates.
Well, that's an example of the class-based bias of these two men who know where their bread's being buttered from. I mean, what large corporation pays the official rate, which is like in the 30% range? Are you kidding? They have so many tax havens, so many techniques, so many loopholes that are passed by Congress, so many ways to escape. That's what all these corporate tax lawyers are doing to earn their money. So the issue is the corporations are undertaxed. Working people and middle class incomes, like make from 30, 40, 50, 60, 70,000 a year, they're overtaxed. And if you look at the total tax burden, the poor pay a higher rate than the rich because the poor have to have withholding, you know, all the FICA and the Social Security, Medicare, et cetera. They get it withheld. And if you take their income, say $15,000 a year, and deduct the amount of taxes they pay federal, state, and local, it's a higher percent than some of the people who are making millions of dollars a year.
And that is the other criticism that comes from the left regarding this, these chairmen's recommendations, that they increase income disparity.
Yeah, which is already the worst in American history. The top 1% of the richest people make the equivalent financial wealth of the bottom 95% of the American people. That's never been that high. In 1980, the top 1% got 10% of the income. Now they got 23% of the income. So it's getting worse and worse. It's amazing that people take it. You know, they listen to all this, and they understand, and they don't question the facts. And then they say, well, we're powerless. Well, you're not powerless, for heaven's sake. I mean, try 300,000-400,000 people mobilizing around their congressional district offices back home. You know, just 4,000 here, 3,000 there, 2,000. It'll begin to shake them up in Washington. People got to show up. Half of democracy, Glenn, is just showing up, as you know, showing up at rallies, marches, city council meetings, courtrooms, and so forth.
Ralph Nader speaking from Washington. The cholera epidemic in Haiti is provoking popular rage and increased resistance to the occupation of that country by United Nations forces. Haitian human rights activist Eugenia Charles was a speaker at last week's Black is Back coalition rally in Washington.
Black is back! And we are strong. I want to thank everyone for coming here this afternoon, and thank you for inviting me to be here with you. Haiti is on the news yet again, and we have not left since January 12th. It is hard, and it is difficult for us in Haiti. The challenges, they just keep on coming. But as a strong people, I have faith that we will survive, that we will overcome yet again the cholera epidemic that is ravaging to the country right now. It's been months and months since the earthquake has passed. We have over 1.5 million people still living in shelters in the city. Many more without shelters. Some of them without clean waters, without proper medical care, without food. And then we say, why do you have a cholera outbreak in Haiti? In September leading to October, according to CDC report, on the Southeast Asia, we had a cholera outbreak. You know, Minister, the United Nations forces, military occupying forces that are in, presently in Haiti, Every 6 months, they change soldiers. So in early October, we have a group of Southern Asian people, soldiers, who arrive in Haiti, in particularly in the Central Plateau in Mirebalais. A few weeks later, we start having cholera outbreaks in Haiti. Investigative journalists have shown us, and thanks God to Al Jazeera, who's been covering the thing since the earthquake and has not left. They have shown on TV where the Nepalese soldiers, whose base is right near the largest river in Haiti, the pipes that is coming from their toilet is leading right into the river. They are hiring Haitian companies to carry the waste and dump it in the river. When the cholera outbreak started, the people who live below the base were affected. Those who are living above the base were not affected. But yet, we had Hurricane Thomas. What happened when you have a hurricane, the rivers overflow, all the waters get connected. So now the disease is spreading beyond. The government has not done sufficient work to educate the communities for them to know how to protect themselves. Places that did not have the outbreak is now seeing hundreds of people falling sick to the disease. Yesterday, the total of people hospitalized was about 11,000. By this morning, when I woke up, it was 12,300. That is only the numbers that the government is reported. But if you talk to people who has not been to the hospital, they will tell you about 15,000 people is critically affected by this disease. For the overall, out of Haiti, we have 10 geographical departments, and 6 of those departments has been affected. The total population affected with the cholera disease is 60,000. We have a lot of money that was collected from the earthquake that are still sitting in bank account, whether it's President Clinton, President Bush makes accounts, whether it's the Red Cross makes account. Those monies are supposedly going to be allocated for reconstruction. There has not been any reconstruction done in Haiti since the earthquake. We have a cholera outbreak, so the money right now should be used to provide clean water and medicals to the people who are in need. And they are still meeting, but yet the people who are dying are not receiving the care that they need. So as a black people and as a black nation, and I say over and over again, we have to take our cause into our own hands. We have to free our own people. Minister has been in Haiti since 2004. Over $5 billion has been wasted on them to secure troops. To do what? They have not built a school since they've been in Haiti. They have not built a hospital. They have not built a road. Actually, before Aristide left in 2004, we had a second university medicals student in their 3rd years. Once they took Aristide out, the first thing minister did was break down the school, took it over, and make it into a military camp. So that is not providing security for Haiti. If you look at the UN Charter, to have a peacekeeping mission in your country, you have to have civil war. You have to have military unrest. We did not have civil war. We did not have military unrest. We had opposition between political factors. There could have been peaceful ways to resolve that problem. But yet, Minister is still in Haiti. The Haitian national budget is less than $1 billion a year. So over $5 billion wasted in Minister. So imagine how much could have been done. Every time you hear international aids, the international aid, why hasn't anything changed in Haiti? Because the aid is not being used to support the Haitian people. It is used to pay folks that are with Minister. It is used to pay the international NGOs that are going back and forth inside the country. You have to ask, okay, how do water get to Haiti? We have plenty of water. We are an island. We are surrounded by water. Why can't we invest the money to treat the waters that we have on the ground to treat the people? That's not being done. It's a business. So it is time that we take things into our hand. It is time that we work as brothers and sisters to make change. And right now, Haiti needs your support. Haiti needs change. We need to get Minister out of Haiti so the money can be invested into the people in Haiti. They are talking about election, and I say, which election? There was election in 2009 with Préval and Minister. Minister take claim that they provide peaceful representation for the election to take place. But if you look at the Senate, you will see all the people that were elected were crooks. We have no parliaments right now. How come? The international community, along with Préval, have purchased those votes. to give us an 18-month mandate, giving the international community unilateral power over Haiti. They make the decision in terms of how the reconstruction money is being used. Haitians have no say, so we are still an independent nation the last time I checked. So why is it that the international community will pay our parliament, who takes their pocket and forget that they should be working for the benefit of the nations, and sold us out? After they sold their vote and then they realized they made a mistake, oh my God, we were not allowed to edit the text, and I said, you dumb. The first time they tell you you could not remove a comma from the text, you should have said, that's not for me. If you voted it, you sold your soul to the devil. And we have a lot of problems in Haiti, my friends. So as you pray, keep the Haitian peoples in your prayer. If you have medical skill, you can help out. We are in dire need. We have many more things that are about to come. If you have a health crisis in a nation, that's not the time to have elections. Because if your people are on bed, in the hospital bed, they don't have clean water, they don't have the medication to treat themselves, how do you expect them to go vote? But the CEP says they are moving ahead with election. That's what the international community wants. So let's work together. Let's support Haiti. Let's make sure that Haiti remain an independent nation. Let's make sure that the blood at Dessalines and Toussaint Louverture was not flooded in hen. Let's make sure that all the 300,000 people that died since the earthquake did not go in vain. Let's remember that in 2004 when Minister came, by 2006, 10,000 were killed. The bullet holes are still in Cité Soleil. You can see them. The black body bags that were not counted for, mothers and daughters and sisters are still asking what happens to their sons. So please, let's take Minister out. Let's support the Haitian people.
Eugenia Charles is with the Mapu Foundation, which works for human rights and sustainable development in Haiti. Larry Hamm heads up the People's Organization for Progress in Newark, New Jersey, one of the constituent organizations of the Black is Back Coalition.
Black is back.
Black is back.
Black is black.
Power to the people.
Power to the people.
Power to the people.
Imagine if we could mobilize, just say, 500 people in every major city across the country on the same day in a Black is Back movement.
Uh-huh.
Then we would have the kind of power that we're aiming for. And that's the kind of power that we're aiming for, to build a movement that can, in fact, transform our communities. That's why I like to hear when that brother asks the question, what about the black community? Well, Brother O'Malley put the question to us. He said, we got white power in black face. But what is another name for white power in black face? This is not a new phenomenon. It's called neocolonialism. If it was neocolonialism in Africa, it's neocolonialism right here in the United States. It's neocolonialism in Latin America. Because they don't just come in blackface. They come in Latino faces. They come in Asian faces. In fact, that's their tactic for the future. But we're here to say, we're not stupid and we're not dumb. They can't fool us. We're going to fight for the liberation of our people, and we're going to take the stand that needs to be taken, despite whatever they say. Our people, what about the black community? What about the black community? We need universal health care. Should be like France. You go to the hospital, get taken care of, and then they give you money to get back home. That's what we need here in the United States of America. We have to transform this system. We have to live up. Why should our children celebrate the birthday of Dr. King, and they don't even put Dr. King's books on required reading in the schools all across this country? I'd rather keep the schools open and the kids learn something about what Dr. King said than to close them and not teach them anything. Dr. King said, we need a radical transformation of our social economic system. Dr. King said, we need a radical redistribution of power and wealth in this country. This is what our children should be learning in school on Dr. King's birthday. Dr. King was not a dreamer. He was a man of action. That's what our children should be learning. Don't tell me, President Obama, you were a community organizer. What picket line were you on? What protests were you at? What police brutality demonstration? What opposition to somebody being evicted? We need community organizers that are going to fight the power, not become part of the power system of oppression in the United States of America. Brothers and sisters, we have to build this movement. We stand at a critical juncture today. We stand virtually 2 feet looking at two paths. One is progress and one is destruction. The people in power are taking us down the road of destruction. They are so enamored with themselves, so greedy for profits, that they would destroy the planet Earth rather than correct the system so that we could all survive on it. They would rather destroy it in the name of profit. They would rather have polluted air, polluted waters, polluted rivers, polluted earth. They would rather have that and have their profits than to have a planet that we could all grow and prosper and thrive on. We stand at the crossroads today. The building of this movement and the building of other people's movements is essential to the survival of not only the black community and Latino community, Asian community, it's essential to the survival of the human race. So we have to go back, brothers and sisters, and build up our movements, build up our organizations, double our memberships, get people involved, be out in the street where the people can see us every day, and fight for the people's needs. Don't just give the people a speech. Fight for the people's needs. You got to be involved in the struggle for justice. Fight against evictions. When somebody is getting put out of their house, Black is back, and all this organization should be there to put them back in the house. When the sheriff come to put them out, we should be there to put them back. When factories are threatening to close and lay off all the workers, we need to be on the picket line, because most of the times we're the last ones hired and the first ones fired. This is what we face today, brothers and sisters, the need to build a movement, not a movement like the 60s, but a movement stronger and better and more powerful than the movement that we had during the 60s. I get calls from people in the prisons. The prison system, the criminal justice system, is nothing but a new form of slavery, brothers and sisters. Those are real plantations, not metaphorical plantations. Real plantations where people are being forced to work for private companies, do work for them and produce products for them and not be paid anything. That's real slavery. Now, brothers and sisters in these overcrowded prisons, they're being beaten by the prison guards. They're being denied their rights. We have to build a movement for them. With 1 million black men behind prison walls, any movement that doesn't have prison reform and prisoners' rights as a component part of its agenda is not a movement for the future. We got to stand up and be the voice of the voiceless, brothers and sisters. We got to be, like they used to say, we got to be the shield and we got to be the spear. We got to be able to defend and we got to be able to attack when necessary those who attack the interests of our people. This is what I think we have to do. I think you share that too. And I know that's what Brother O'Malley is trying to get us to do. So when we go back, let us go back and build energetically at the grassroots level. So when we bring it all together, brothers and sisters, we make the earth tremble. Power to the people.
Larry Hamm of Newark, New Jersey's People's Organization for Progress. Finally, we bring on the chairman of the Black is Back Coalition, O'Malley Yeshitela.
It's a good day to struggle. I want to say that the Black is Back Coalition is one of the most important things that's happened to our struggle since the 1960s. And we have participating in this coalition all kinds of different organizations. Some of them are informed and influenced by religion. Muslims are here, and they've come as Muslims who are opposed to what imperialism is doing throughout the world and what imperialism is doing to people because they are Muslims. Christians are here because they have a certain belief system also that informs them that there is something wrong by a foul, rotten social system that is bent on enslaving and maintaining the enslavement of the peoples of the world. People have come because they believe in reparations. They believe that while people are telling us that what we should be working for is more jobs, what needs to happen is that we need to get paid for the work that we've already done. People are here who call themselves social democrats. People are here as liberals. Some people call themselves communists. I am a revolutionary. I am somebody who is convinced that America, the American social system, has no redeeming qualities at all. That the only way that we will ever be free is to uproot this cancer from the planet Earth. That the peoples who produce all the value, working people, ought to be the ones who are in control of the system so that we can mutually share the value that we create. But we are motivated by different belief systems. The one thing that seems to unite us all is that we are opposed to imperialism, that we believe in the right to self-determination, that a people, all peoples, have the right to be free to determine their own future, that there is something wrong with living in a social system where every 4 years you got to pray, oh God, please let a good white man get elected this time. We believe that we have a responsibility, that the integrity of our people demand that we fight for the absolute total liberation of black people here and around the world. That nothing else will satisfy us. Nothing else will satisfy us. Now, brothers and sisters, here's the situation we find ourselves in today. We're not just out here on a lovely, warm, November in Washington, D.C., just to get along, just to have a little picnic kind of atmosphere. The world, the whole imperialist world is in a state of severe crisis. Uncle Sam is in trouble. Not only is Uncle Sam in trouble, but his cousins and relatives are in trouble throughout the world as well. Imperialism is feeling death throes. It is something that is in a process of being wiped off the planet Earth. It's not dying because it's committing suicide. The fact is, it is a system that requires for its existence and success the oppression and exploitation of the vast majority of the peoples of the world. But what is happening is the peoples of the world are engaged in the most serious fight back, the most serious resistance imperialism has ever had to face. This is the basis of the crisis. The economic crisis? Why is there an economic crisis? The economic crisis is because we live in an imperialist-dominated political economy. Why is it that we live in a world where half the people on Earth live off less than $2 a day? Why is it that any place on the planet Earth, the only place you see where people are healthy, have enough food to eat, have enough resources, are white people around the world? Did God or somebody bestow on white people all the wealth and the rest of us poverty and misery? No. It didn't happen like that. It happened because of a social system that was born parasitic. We talk about reparations because capitalism that we talk about, imperialism that we talk about, got to be what it is because it enslaved us and peoples around the world. That's where the resources came from. Before Europe set out to attack the rest of us, Europe was impacted by disease and poverty. They had a plague that killed half the white people on Earth, died, but in 4 short periods. 4 short years, between 1347 and 1352, half the white people on Earth died. They had nothing. And over the next several decades, people were still suffering in Europe. How did Europe rescue itself? It rescued itself by setting out and brigandage, piracy, slavery against the rest of us. It rescued itself by coming here to the Americas, the place that we now call the Americas, where the indigenous people were living all right until they got here. They set out to Asia. They forced wars on Asia. This is what they call a primitive accumulation, the startup of capital. It started through looting the rest of the world. And so now you have a situation where all the resources that belong to the people, both human and material, are concentrated in a white community somewhere. Whether it's in Belgium, whether it is in Paris, France, whether it is in England, Germany, or here in the United States. And it's come here as a consequence of what it has stolen from everybody else. But now the peoples of the world are standing up and taking their resources back. That's why the U.S. is in places like Pakistan. That's why they're out there murdering babies and children in Afghanistan right now. That's why they try to keep the oppressed people living in poverty and misery in Palestine. That's why they're threatening Hugo Chavez and the revolution in Venezuela. Because people are standing up to take back their resources. That is the basis of the crisis. Guess what? It is a crisis that is so serious that this same white power that defined itself as white, not me. You remember that? It defined itself as white. And it defined me as black. This same white power that used to brag so much about how white it was now can't represent itself as itself in its own face anywhere else in the world. Because people don't play that stuff no more. Used to be a time when the white man showed up, the people would throw down their guns and run away. It doesn't work like that anymore. Everybody around the world is hating U.S. imperialism and white power. So what does white power do? It disguises itself. It puts on a false face. It like Halloween. Now, what it did was it can't come in its own face, so it comes out looking just like you. Imperialism couldn't look like itself anymore. So now it is white power in a black face. Not only it does, and yeah, I'm going to talk about that bootlicking, butt-kissing, reactionary, murdering tyrant. I'm talking about Barack Obama. And let me tell you something. We have a responsibility to talk about Barack Obama. Africans have a greater responsibility to talk about Barack Obama than anybody else on earth. Because if we don't say something about him, Hugo Chavez and the people in Venezuela will think he represents us. If we don't think something about him, the people who they are murdering in Afghanistan and Palestine will think that he represents us. He don't represent us, and we call him what he is. He's a sellout, bootlicking Uncle Tom reactionary who works for white power. So to denounce Barack Obama is not some kind of immature reaction. It is a responsibility. It is our responsibility to tell the world, guess what? Hey, white power can't come in his own face anymore. Hey, people who are struggling in South America, people who are struggling against imperialism in Asia, that imperialism now is coming looking just like you look. It's not coming looking like it used to look anymore. So we denounce Barack Obama. That's our responsibility. We say it louder than anybody else. Oh, yes, we do. To do anything else is to be in bed with the criminal. And I want to say this, because we share some of the sentiments that have just been mentioned out here. We need to build a genuine revolutionary movement. We need to be talking about how we going to overthrow this damn system. Listen to what I'm talking about. How do you get around the question that we live in a country where they say there are 12 and 13% of the population? Well, we got a situation where more than half the people in prisons are black people, Africans, and especially young African men. They are shoving us into these prison systems. I used to have a friend, Sister Effie, and I used to work with a man. He used to call himself Stokely Carmichael Kwame Ture. He used to always say that black people are not going to be like the Jews. We're not going to march in the ovens. Hell, we are already in the ovens. When you got a situation where more than half the people are in the penitentiary of this country, that's the ovens right there. All they got to do is light the fuse anytime they want to. They kill us quickly or they kill us slowly like they're doing there today. So we oppose to that. And we say that this is a rotten, foul social system. Listen to this. Here's a Negro up in the white people's house today. Barack Hussein Obama. In the white people's house today. He has done more to attack black people than George Bush ever could have done. McCain never could have got away with what Obama has done. You would have been marching. White liberals would have been marching if McCain had been escalating the war, sending killer drones to murder people in Pakistan. But he didn't do it because that Negro was there. And because you love that Negro so much, they didn't want to hurt your feelings. And also because a whole bunch of white people want to say, well, I did my share for Negroes because I voted for Barack Hussein Obama. Well, it don't work that way. I want to open up all the doors, free all those prisoners. Let every damn body you got in jail out today. Let them out today. Don't tell me about a crime they committed. They can live as long as Methuselah, and they could not have committed the kinds of crimes against anybody that George Bush has committed, that Barack Hussein Obama has committed in this short period of time. So we oppose to them all. We oppose to imperialism. We don't care if imperialism speaks Spanish. We don't care if they can say assalamu alaikum. We don't care if they're black. We don't care if they're white. If they're imperialists, damn it, they're imperialists. And we oppose to them, and we want to bring them all down. We have to do that. If we don't do that, we leave the masses of our people disarmed. Even if you ain't strong enough to stop them, you got to call them a dirty so-and-so. And you got to say it so that people can hear you. So that when the people get ready to move, you've already told them it's all right to move. That's why we out here now. Ain't a lot of us out here now. Because many people are influenced by what they see on television. They're influenced by some of our militant friends who say, you got to be down with Obama. But we telling people they got good instincts. The masses have good instincts. They know something is wrong. They know that the white people didn't give this lickspittle $700 million to elect him because they like us. They know damn well they didn't do it for us. They did it for him. They did it for them. They did it to hope uphold imperialism. But when they see us out here, just a handful of us, when we march down the street going to the white people's house saying, damn it, black is back. When they see us, they know that their instincts were right. They knew that they knew something was wrong, and we validate exactly what they believe. We provide them permission to be against white power, to be against Barack Obama as well. That's why we're here. Malcolm X used to talk about, he said, the fuse is the most powerful part of a stick of dynamite. Well, we are the fuse right here. We are the fuse, and we are on fire. We're on fire. And that's what our responsibility, that's what leadership is all about. You don't lead by poll. You don't lead because you got a whole bunch of people who already want to do what you want to do. You got to make the hard choices. You got to take people where they didn't even know they were supposed to go. And you got to have the guts to tell them that Barack Hussein Obama is not for you. He is for white power. He represents white power. He represents Wall Street. He represents the Pentagon. He is an enemy to black people and the oppressed peoples around the world. If you don't say it, people be confused. They think you like him. If they like you, they don't want to do nothing to him because you like him. We said, you got our permission to do what has to be done. So we want to build a revolutionary movement. And we invite everybody who wants to do that. Look at what Black is Back stands for. It stands for freeing all these political prisoners. Not just one or two. Every one of them. We got people who are locked up in prison who've been there for scores, for decades now. Only thing they did before a bootlicker like Barack Obama moved to Chicago to establish his credentials as a black person, you had people like Sunni Ada Okoli, people like Asada Shakur, people like Herman Bell, people like Anthony Bottoms. All of these people, they were out there risking their lives. People like the Stewart Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, they risked their lives. They put their lives on the line so that a lick spiller like this clown could even think about voting or getting elected. People who died, people just to register to try to join the Democratic Party. They weren't trying to be with Saddam Hussein. They weren't trying to join the Cuban Revolution. They just wanted to join the Democratic Party. And this country bombed our babies in their sleep just for wanting to do that. And now we've got these people locked up in prisons. They're rotting away in prisons. And we're talking about, we can't say nothing about this lick spittle. I don't want to talk about him too much because I go to jail today. We can't say nothing about him. We can't say nothing about him. But all our these brothers and sisters, Sada Shakur, running even in Cuba like a damn slave with a $1 million bounty on her head that this government has put on her. And hear this. Now I'm going to just say this about Obama. Because he went to Africa. He stood up in Ghana for where Kwame Nkrumah, for the one who talked about uniting African people all around the world. But where Lyndon Baines Johnson, the president of the United States, had him overthrown. He went to Africa, the home of Patrice Lumumba, who stood up to try to make Congo free so that the resources that are there, that are still feeding the industry of imperialism, could belong to black people. He went to those places and he said that you can't blame the white man for what's wrong with Africa no more. He said that the problem in Africa is not colonialism, but corrupt leadership, no transparency. He didn't talk about how Johnson, when every time we had good leaders, America was on the front, on the pointing edge to overthrow them, to murder them in their sleep and stuff like that. If he was anything that anybody said he was, the first executive order he would have given when he went to power is for the FBI to release all the information about who murdered Malcolm X, how they killed Martin Luther King, how all these other people that they have suppressed. If he was worth a pitcher of warm spit, he would have demanded that the CIA release all the evidence of all the murder and brutality they have created throughout the continent of Africa. Won't do that. So I'm saying join the Black is Back Coalition, y'all. We shouldn't be here next year with these few people. We need to build a revolutionary movement. Bring your own beliefs. I don't care what you believe in as long as you believe that imperialism got to go. I don't care if you nappy head, process, however you come. If you have the ability to say that we have the right to self-determination. I'm not talking about somebody who's just talking about peace. Don't tell me about peace in Iraq. Peace in Afghanistan, peace in Palestine. We don't say just peace. We say victory to the Afghan resistance. We say victory to the Iraqi resistance. We say victory to the Palestinian revolution. We say victory to the oppressed peoples around the world. Hell, anybody can call for peace. George Bush wanted peace. All he wanted to do was the people to stop fighting. If you stop fighting, you got peace. Hell no. We like Che Guevara. What did Che Guevara say even when the white left was running around here talking about no more Vietnams? What did Che Guevara say? He recognized that the Vietnamese Revolution was the forward point spear of history. He said we need 2-3 million Vietnams. That's our stance right now. We're on the side of the oppressed. Victory to the oppressed. And finally, I'm going to sit down. I just want to say this. You can't get on no boat in Africa in 1619 as an African and then get off in Jamestown, Virginia as a Negro. If we got on the boat in Africa as Africans, damn it, when the boat docked here, we were still Africans. Unless that was some magic boat. Maybe that was the boat that Jonah fell off and was swallowed by the big fish. Maybe that was the boat that Noah messed around to build. But if it was just a regular boat, the one that you and I get on a regular basis when we ever go somewhere, if it was like one of them boats that we got on the continent of Africa to come here, if we got on the boat as Africans, when we got off the boat, we were still Africans. You don't have to go to school to understand that, do you? You have to go to school to unlearn that. It don't make no sense any other way. I was an African then. I am an African now. And I say, ease way late to E Africa. We say one Africa. We say one Africa. We say one nation. Uhuru.
This is Black Agenda Radio, information for liberation.
For 2 years, we watched Barack Obama undercut the left wing of his party at every turn, with disdain so palpable his minions could not resist insulting leftists in the most juvenile terms. For 2 years, we watched the first black president facilitate the greatest transfer of wealth in human history, $12 to $14 trillion, to Wall Street. And we watched as he put the U.S. war machine back on the offensive in the world. For 2 years, we heard Obama say over and over again that he had no intention of taking targeted action to help black and brown communities that had been targeted for destruction by banks. After 2 years, one would think that folks on the left would have gotten the idea that Obama is pro-Pentagon, pro-Wall Street, and doesn't have a transformative bone in his body regarding either race or class. But for many, the message, however obvious, has not sunk in. Rather than face the fact that Obama is not a friend of the people, leftish commentators insist on conducting a psychological analysis of the president. They seem to be trying to find some quirk in Obama's personality that can be corrected in time for the Armageddon showdown with the Republicans. Take Paul Krugman of the New York Times, for example. People on the left like to quote him a lot, which I find strange since Krugman can talk about the political meltdown of 2008 for 45 minutes and never say the word corporation, as if corporations have nothing to do with the meltdown. But anyway, the liberal Krugman insists that Obama's problem is he tried to transcend partisan divisions, not understanding that sometimes one has to fight. That's a recurring theme with Obama apologists, that Obama won't fight. But Obama showed plenty of fight during the health care debate. He fought the left wing of his party every step of the way, exiling single-payer supporters to the margins while he kissed Republican booty and empowered Blue Dogs and DLCers. He didn't just fight progressives, he stomped their butts into the dirt. Dr. Ron Daniels of the Institute for the Black World thinks the problem is Obama's failure to effectively communicate his vision, programs, and policies. I think Obama has communicated quite effectively that he wanted expanded theaters of war, trillions for Wall Street, and nothing special whatsoever for black or brown America, those places that he says don't exist. It isn't that Obama has trouble conveying his vision. It's that his actual vision is unacceptable to progressives. Of all people, Barack Obama doesn't need communications lessons. William Greeter, probably the leftmost of our three subjects, says Obama needs to learn hardball so he can fight the Republicans that are trying to bury him. This, however, would require a 180-degree vision change on Obama's part, since his actual vision has always been to join with Republicans at some point much further to the right than the rest of us would ever want to go. The psychological problem is not Obama's. It's the problem, however, of much of the left, who imagined an Obama that never existed. That's why it was so easy for Obama and his corporate handlers to psych out the left. If you think Obama is salvageable, then you're the one with the psychological problem.
This is Black Agenda Radio, organic soul food for your media diet.
And that's it for this edition of Black Agenda Radio, produced by the same team that brings you blackagendareport.com on the internet. I'm Glenn Ford. Our thanks to the good people at the Progressive Radio Network, and especially to our engineer, Matt Bogart.
This is Black Agenda Radio, information for liberation.